I don't care what your body fat is in 6 weeks. I care what your blood pressure is in 6 years. And if you think about that sort of long-term patient's outlook about health, man, it is extremely powerful. It's a little bit like investing. You invest a little bit for a long time, and that money really compounds. And people can make the same investment in their personal health behaviors and in their long-term health and their fitness. And PT folks are uniquely positioned to help coach and deliver that for people in a way that a lot of other folks in the medical system aren't fortunate enough to be able to do.
Talking more about pain, Bray on the show, Jason Silvernail. Jason, a great, great story coming from the U.S. Army ROTC program into U.S. Army, then becoming a physical therapist. We talk Northeast Pennsylvania. We talk pain science and just some insight. I love his analogy with shopping in a grocery store. Two different ways to do it, and relating that to how we treat our patients. So take a listen to some of Jason's insight and definitely follow him online for some more of that. Episode, as always, brought to you by Owens Recovery Science. Johnny Owens and his team, a single source for a certification for personalized blood flow restriction rehabilitation training and the equipment you need to apply it in clinical practice. Find them online, along with some research behind BFR, at owensrecoveryscience.com, and maybe take a course with Johnny and his team as they travel the country and travel the world as the leaders in BFR.
Let's do this.
The best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours.
Welcome aboard.
This is the PT Pintcast. Here's your host, physical therapist, Jimmy McKay.
All right, welcome back to the show in Pain Month, Pain Awareness Month. Really just doing an entire month of pain. And I like when we turn things around kind of quick. We were talking with Jared Hall just the other day. And during three questions, we asked him who is someone that the audience should know more about. And he mentioned today's guest. So I like when we turn that around. On the show today, Jason Silvernail. Jason, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jimmy, thanks for having me. And I'm really glad all that money I sent Jared to promote me is actually turning into something useful. And he's not just keeping it all to himself. Jared, if you're listening, I'm not going to send you any more. We've already talked about that.
Yeah, you've reached your limit. You can find Jason online at Jason Silvernail. And I like checking out Twitter profiles because they force people to be brief when describing themselves. And people can get pretty creative. And in yours, you say you're reliably rational on most issues most of the time, I think. So I got to know, what's something that you get slightly irrational about some of the time?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. So I think one of the things that can be infuriating about like people who are like mentally organized the way I am, and if I'm being honest, it's maybe a little bit Asperger-y, is that I'm often pretty rational, which means, and so rationality is sort of distinct from intelligence, which is good because I'm not very intelligent, but rationality is just that you make decisions or you come to opinions for good reasons, and you can articulate those reasons
logically,
right? So that's kind of what rationality is, right? So I try to be reliably rational on most issues most of the time. So I'm like everybody else. I get triggered, right?
Right.
I get mad about stuff and all that. And I think that the more time you spend in critical thinking and thinking about rationality is that there's this thing called the unconscious bias. And that's the funny thing about the unconscious bias is, it's unconscious.
Right. Even if you're aware of it, chances are good. Yeah, what are you going
to
do about it?
I try to be aware of it, right? I try to be aware, and I try to be reliably rational, but I know there are times when I lose that, and there are people in my life who kind of check me that way, like my wife is one, and, you know, I have some good friends who are others who are just able to say, hey, you make this big show of being, you know, making all these decisions for good reasons, but what you're saying over here doesn't make sense.
Right.
And you're not following, and like, yeah, you got me on that one.
Yeah.
So, it's tough to be reliably rational. I certainly try to, I'm open to being corrected. So, call me out, people. I can't believe I admitted that.
It all the time, right? You gotta go off.
I think that's human nature, right?
100%. Yeah, and I think now, especially in this day and age, there's actually a word for it, which you mentioned, which was triggered. It's like, listen, that thing's been around. Being triggered's been around for a million years. We just like to throw the word around now.
Yeah. No, now we actually have a word that at least describes it on some basic level, right?
Right, right. 570, Jason, we have a connection. You went to University of Scranton. Before that, you lived in Clark Summit, Northeast Pennsylvania.
I certainly did. I went to high school there as well.
Nice. My radio days, most of them anyway, at the end of my radio career, was spent in Northeast Pennsylvania working at a rock station based out of Wilkes-Barre, and I lived in Green Ridge, second to Scranton for a couple of years and near Lake Scranton.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, so we're geeking out on North. The audience doesn't care at all, but you and I are talking about Northeast Pennsylvania stuff.
Yeah, or NEPA, as they say.
Yeah.
Hey, so what station did you work for?
I worked for 97.9X. Before that, it was called The Bear. You might have known it as The Bear.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I used to listen to that all the time. Well, I'm kind of a classic rock guy, so I used to listen to that all the time.
That was
maybe I even heard you. You never know.
You never know. The great area of the country. I miss that area. Just great people. Like,
you know somebody else who went to school in Northeast Pennsylvania? I don't know if you've had them on your show or not. Karen Litzy.
Yeah. She was one of my first episodes. She's from...
Good choice.
She is from where? What's the pizza capital of the world?
Oh, my gosh. I just
Dunmore?
Had it in my head now. As soon as you...
Dunmore? No, it's not Dunmore.
Son of a gun. So Karen, Karen's listening right now going, these freaking clowns.
Old Forge.
That's it. It is Old Forge.
All right. Now that we got that out of the way, now we understand we're Northeast PA best friends.
There'll be a quiz at the end, right?
You mentioned that you went to high school in Clark Summit, went to the University of Scranton for undergrad and PT school?
I did, yeah.
You spent an undergraduate summer juggling ROTC training, your clinical internship, all the way down in Wilkes-Barre, so a decent half-hour drive, and a job at UPS all at the same time. And I wanted to hear, because hopefully there's some students listening, what did that teach you just being a hustler and doing all those things at once?
Oh, wow. I certainly learned a lot. You know, it's funny. Like, I remember having this conversation. Like, people would come back from spring break and there would be like tans, you know, and people would talk about the parties they had and, you know, maybe the beer that they drank. That was not my college experience. Like every fall or spring break, I was in the woods with the ROTC with my face painted, running around in the woods with a rifle, which I definitely prefer to being on the beach with beer. but that's probably a side thing. I joined the army. That's the whole deal. That's what they put in the brochure to get me to join. You're running around in the woods with guns and face paint. It was awesome. But I think on the summers, I would have a ROTC training event, and some of them were long, like leadership assessment camps, and some of them were shorter. But I would also do PT internship, of course, as we all knew, that's how you spent your summers later in your career. I'd have to work, you know, for money, for books, for tuition, for all those things. My ROTC scholarship only took me so far. I gave a lot of plasma too.
Yeah.
I think it definitely kept me from getting into trouble because I was so busy and so tired all the time that it was difficult. So I'd be up in Scranton. I would drive down early in the morning to my internship, finish my internship at the VA down there, turn around, drive all the way back. And so Dr. Barbara Wagner, who was one of my professors at Scranton, she actually let me use the locker room in the PT gym to change into my work clothes to go work at UPS. And I was on the, I wasn't driving the truck or doing anything cool. So I don't know if you know this, Jimmy, but the drivers at UPS, these are big deals. People aspire to this.
Oh, yeah.
Believe me, I was not a driver. I was a peon. I was like measuring boxes and putting them on a conveyor belt, you know, and arguing with some of the people on the assembly line. That was definitely my role at UPS. It was definitely nothing important. I was about as low as you came. But I think it's important, thing for all of us to be in touch with hard work and with the importance and the things that it teaches you to value the things that you do have. And I think that people, if you've grown up, most of us have some kind of adversity in our life. My gosh, who's got a perfect life? None of us do. Right. And I think we all reflect on those things. I think that it's really valuable context for what we can do and what we can think about where our life is now and where we're heading and where we came from. And I have found that's just really valuable. I look back now and it's more fun to laugh at it, you know, than to think too seriously about it. But my gosh, those are some busy summers.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dr. Wagner, for letting me use a locker room.
Yeah, very nice. And the reason I bring that up is that's what I did. A lot of things that resonate with me is things that I've experienced or things that I've heard other people do, which is busy people stay busy. And they get more done. I've heard that. That's a quote too, is if you want to get something done, give it to a busy person. And I think that's what the type of person also this profession draws. That's where the segue goes now is you went into the United States Army. So as we record this, different than the day we release this, it's September 11th. So I want to say thank you for your service today and every other day, not just because 9/11. But you had a really, really interesting and unique career in the Army as a PT, chief of physical therapy at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center in Washington, D.C., which is iconic, and U.S. Army Performance Triad Team at the Office of the Surgeon General as the Surgeon General's subject matter expert on exercise, fitness, and musculoskeletal medicine. Wow, where do we start with both of those things? Were those at the same time? I couldn't figure out when I was reading about you. Were those at the same time?
Oh, yeah, no, we did, you know. I mean, you just talked to the story about how busy I was, but there's no way I could have done both jobs.
I was just checking with you.
I've actually been very fortunate. So let's talk a little bit about the Army stuff, and that's always cool. I'm still in the Army, and because I am, I got to give you my little disclaimer deal.
Sure.
Everything you and I talk about today, Jimmy, is my personal opinion and commentary, and it's not reflect the official policy or position of the United States Army, the Department of Defense, or the United States government. So now that we've done that, so I joined the Army when I was 17 years old, because you know how you grow up and you just people say, oh, I always wanted to be a blank.
Right.
So I always wanted to be a garbage man first because they get to ride on the outside of the truck. And my mom's like, oh, dream big, kid. And, you know, and then I wanted to be Spider-Man. It turns out neither of those are really great careers. And so the third thing I wanted to be in my life was a soldier. So I've always wanted to be a soldier. And so I joined the Army when I was 17. I went to boot camp. We had a little party up there in Northeast Pennsylvania. We graduated. We had a graduation party. I went home. I slept for like 2 hours.
Wow.
I woke up and I had a bag packed and my recruiter picked me up and took me to basic training.
Wow.
Right, the very day after the graduation party. So I went through, lucky enough to get an ROTC scholarship to get me through school. And I've been a physical therapist in the Army ever since. I'm coming up on this next month will be 28 years in the Army.
Wow.
And I've been really fortunate to do a lot of cool things. I definitely worked in the Office of the Surgeon General on the performance triad. And I think that so the Army's performance triad is a concept of sleep, activity, and nutrition. You know, get it? There's three things.
Yeah.
And so the deal is that we're helping the Army pivot toward a more holistic health and fitness concept. And, of course, we love acronyms in the Army. So holistic health and fitness, in case you want to know, it's H2F.
Exciting,
right?
We like
nice,
that, yeah.
Huh? So we're really trying to help the Army pivot toward a more holistic approach to healthcare, but clearly connected to where the science is. And that's really where I got exposed to all the great science on health coaching and health behaviors and the impact of health behaviors on people's health and their medical outcomes, which really has been a big focus of the things I travel and teach about and the things that I'm really excited about in PT. But from there, I went and I was the chief of physical therapy at Walter Reed. And then I was actually the assistant chief of staff at Walter Reed. That's the number three person at Walter Reed.
Wow.
And I did that for a couple of years. And I've just moved recently to San Antonio, where I'm the chief of physical therapy at Brooke Army Medical Center. And I'm the deputy consultant for the Surgeon General for Physical Therapy. And it just gives me a great opportunity to work with really, really talented people doing important work about the way that healthcare is changing. And healthcare is changing in the Department of Defense as surely as it is changing in what we would call the civilian sector, which is the rest of the country, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is so exciting. And you kind of mentioned before, like, what do those busy summers teach me? I think one of the things that it taught me is how much unbelievable opportunity there is in our country, in our industry, and in life for people who are willing to put the time and effort in. It is tremendous, the opportunity that all of us are fortunate enough to have these days. And certainly I've been very lucky to have a career that has allowed me to do really exciting things.
Yeah.
From running a hospital to consulting on changing healthcare in the military.
Policy, right, yeah.
To helping set policy, to just the daily teaching the talented officers that work for me about how to deliver evidence-based, safe, effective healthcare
yeah.
and physical therapy and rehabilitation and how to run an excellent clinic. And it's really exciting. And I'm so fortunate to be able to do that.
That's great. I mean, you can tell just by the way you're talking about it is how pumped. I got questions though, man. I got questions.
Yeah, bro. You got questions.
So,
I got answers.
So,
man, bring it on.
So when you're the Surgeon General's subject matter expert on exercise, fitness, and musculoskeletal science, that's a broad area. Like, are they consulting with you? Are they calling before they write a speech? If you're their subject matter expert, if something like this comes up, how do you interact in that role?
Yeah. So when I was in that role in the performance triad, when we would roll out new policy and procedure for how we run medicine and the things that we focus on in Army medicine, and when we did that, the Surgeon General and her team turned to our group, and we were just, there's a bunch of us in cubicles, and we would scour the literature, we'd read the literature, we would write position papers, we would create PowerPoint decks, we would come and we would brief her on what she wanted to say, mm-hmm. and we would take her feedback and be able to deliver what she wanted in terms of the content and the applicability of what we are saying. It's funny. In the Department of Defense, we're in the middle of this huge healthcare transformation. And the transformation, a big part of it involves pivoting towards helping people live healthier lives, not just delivering them medical services.
Right.
You know what I mean about the
right.
difference?
Right, right.
And that piece is huge. Everything that we did in Army medicine then and everything we're doing in Army medicine now is pivoted and around and designed to improve combat readiness of our military force. And if you think about, maybe you're sitting back there and you're listening to this podcast and you're like, well, why has McKay got this guy on? It's just Army, 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 right? So when I think about military readiness, how people can apply that outside the military, it's not just can I deliver therapy or medicine services to this person? It's how many of these people that I'm taking care of are getting back to work? How many of them are playing with their kids again? How many of them are returning to a healthy lifestyle that's going to help them, not just now, but 30 years from now. I once heard a personal trainer saying, I don't care what your body fat is in 6 weeks. I care what your blood pressure is in 6 years.
Wow.
And if you think about that sort of long-term patient's outlook about health, man, it is extremely powerful. It's a little bit like investing. You invest a little bit for a long time, and that money really compounds. And people can make the same investment in their personal health behaviors and in their long-term health and their fitness. And PT folks are uniquely positioned to help coach and deliver that for people in a way that a lot of other folks in the medical system aren't fortunate enough to be able to do.
Well said. You can tell you were leading men. I mean, I'm ready to run out through the door and take on the world as a PT now.
That's exciting stuff,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I wanted to ask, too, or say thank you for being in such a positions in terms of healthcare and hospital systems and the Army, but I think likely the other people in leadership positions were likely MDs or other healthcare professionals. Is that right? Like, the people who are in hospitals?
Yeah, certainly it's rarer for a physician or a nurse or a healthcare administrator, relatively speaking, to think that this is a big deal because it's definitely more aligned with what they do.
Right.
When I was at Walter Reed as the assistant chief of staff, I mean, I'm hopeful, but one of the things I tried to do is to realize is a lot of those folks in the C-suite or the command suite or the, the leadership hallway of that hospital, I was really kind of a proxy for what physical therapists are and what they do and what they know. Because I work with tons of physicians, I work with tons of nurses, and I work with tons of healthcare administrators, truly dedicated, supremely talented and competent people, but just did not really understand or get what PT folks were about and what we were like.
Yeah.
And I fully understood kind of that responsibility that I had to try to set my best possible example. And I hope I set a good one. I think I did pretty well. I guess we'll find out over time. And luckily, it's not just me. The military physical therapy community generally is full of just unbelievably talented people. We have PTs commanding large organizations in the military and all three branches of service doing amazing things. Clinic commanders, organizational commanders, policy experts. We are punching above our weight, so to speak, and we are pushing in the military community as hard as all of you are pushing in the civilian community to make sure our patients have access to low-cost, low-risk, non-invasive care that works, and that's what we do in PT.
Yeah. Well, thank you for doing that and doing that well. It just sets a good precedent, right? We can tell our colleagues in healthcare how great we are as a profession, but when you get to be in the room, when you get to be in the boardroom and show versus tell, that does a lot for the profession now and down the road. So thank you for doing that. Appreciate it.
You bet.
All right, so we brought you on because, it is pain month and kind of just really...
Yeah.
Talking pain. You're actually taking part in an unconference. I almost called it a conference. It's an unconference.
Oh, don't do that. It's don't an unconference. Good catch, Jimmy.
Third annual Pain Unconference in Montreal. Great location. PainUnconference.com. Was that Maxi Mishak?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Going to be out there September 28th, McGill University in Montreal.
That's
pretty,
right.
Pretty
yeah,
good location.
Yeah. Windows closing if you're interested. I mean, I'm really excited to co-present with Maxi. She's amazing. She has come from like a psychology and psychotherapy background, mm-hmm. and she's going to be delivering some really, really cool information and some really, really cool material about how to connect with and read people and help establish that really important connection or that therapeutic alliance with your patients. Once she kind of has her piece, I'm going to come in and I'm going to start helping people, and I'm going to deliver some tools that they can use to help coach people toward their goals and kind of adopt a coaching mindset. Because I think that that's something that's definitely an untapped resource we have in PT. I would like more of us to do that. And so it's one of the things I talk a lot about when I speak and when I'm on podcasts or up on at presentations.
In terms of motivational interviewing because of behavioral changes, is that one of the parts of it? Or
hey, absolutely. So, you know, for the longest time, I thought that my job was the evaluation, diagnosis, and treatment of orthopedic and musculoskeletal problems in a non-surgical method of care. Well, turns out I was wrong. It turns out that I'm in the business of behavior change. And if you're in physical therapy, you're in that business too. And I found that as I was going through this process with the performance triad in the Army, and I was reading this health coaching material and trying to help people make these changes and realizing that I didn't know a whole lot about how to help people change their behavior. And I had all these ideas about how good I was at this stuff. And it turns out that my ideas about how good I was did not match really well with the outcome in terms of my ability to explain things. And so I help teach people principles of motivational interviewing and principles of cognitive behavioral therapy that they can use to adopt a coaching mindset with their patients. Instead of just sitting there and telling people what to do, how to make a connection, how to find the patient's internal motivation of what brought them in that door to begin with, and help connect what you're doing to their motivation. And I use kind of those principles to help us do that.
Yeah, we're talking about a lot now anyway. One of the words that comes up a lot in this show and on social media around PT is biopsychosocial. So if you're not focused on that psycho part of it and how you can influence it too, you know, it is a different profession, right? I mean, psychologists are important, but you can influence that behavior through things that are not out of the realm or the scope of your practice in terms of communicating.
Jimmy, I'm really glad you brought that up, because this is a concern I get a lot from people. And they use some my three most hated words, scope of practice, mm-hmm. right? So I think we have a lot of people who are very interested in siloing themselves into, you know, a separate group, and they're walling themselves off from other people in medicine on the healthcare team. As we all know, medicine's a team sport, and we need everybody playing from the same playbook. Some people will call that silo. After a while, they'll tend to think of it as their cylinder of excellence, right? Where I think it's actually the opposite. So when I talk about coaching people, I'm not talking about making a psychological or psychiatric diagnosis. I'm not talking about providing psychotherapy. I'm talking about connecting with people, communicating with them, as you so well put, and getting to the bottom of what their motivations and concerns are, and using those to leverage them so that they can be successful in therapy. That is absolutely something that we should be responsible for doing. And because a lot of us don't have a lot of experience with it, it helps to kind of have a framework. It helps to have some principles, you know, maybe even an acronym or two. And I try to help deliver that to people to get them started. I have found that once I get people started on some of these principles, they kind of find their own rhythm and they develop their own style with patients pretty well. But getting started seems to be the big problem. We're so used to listening to patients, kind of mentally ticking down our list of things we need to do, telling them what they need to do, and then later think to ourselves, man, why didn't they follow my instructions?
Right. Because you told
and
them.
And this really helps break you out. Yeah, exactly. That's telling. That's instructing.
Right.
That's not coaching.
And
right?
We know that.
Coaching is much different. Yeah, I think we do. I think more of us could benefit from seeing things that way. I think there's a very strong case to be made that our ability to help our patients adhere to the programs we set has a lot to do with us, not a lot to do with them.
What is it? Is it like permission? Did we feel like we lacked permission to be able to to focus on the communication? I mean, you mentioned that tick box. Remember, I was guilty of that as well as a student, as a new clinician, thinking, okay, they just said this, so I got to do this, this, this. And as soon as they were done talking, I'd be like, okay, now it's my turn. Now I'm supposed to show you how smart I am.
Yeah,
so
exactly,
is it a permission issue? Like,
well, I think that's an insightful way to look at it. I don't think I've ever heard of it that way, but I think that as I think about it, I think you're right, is that people don't feel they have permission to do that. So, you know, here's another way to look at it. Think about going to the grocery store. So when we teach people to be healthcare providers, and believe me, this is in the physician and nursing community and in other communities, including other clinicians as well, we teach them to be practitioner-centric, and we teach them to be list-centric. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how you go to the, I don't know how you shop at the grocery store, but here's what we do at my house. We go to the grocery store, and we walk through the grocery store, and as we see things we know we need, we pull them off the shelf, and we're paying attention to what's on the shelves, and hopefully what's going on in the grocery store so I don't run somebody over with my cart. Not that I've ever done that. And then at the end of all that, I check my list and see if I forgot anything. But we don't teach people to interview patients the way that they shop for groceries. We teach them the opposite. So we teach them to walk into the grocery store, to look straight down at your list, see what the first item is, walk in the grocery store where item number one is, pick it up, then return to the entrance of the grocery store, and then look for item number two and go down the list that way. Now, one of the things that people often are concerned about when I bring up coaching and I bring up motivational interviewing and I bring up kind of connecting with patients is they tell me, that's great, Silvernail, but I don't have time for all that. I don't have tons of time with my patients. Well, I got to tell you, Jimmy, I don't have tons of time with my patients either. But what I do know is that I don't have time to not do this. I don't have time to not connect with my patient and understand what their motivation is. I waste tons of time just talking at them and trying to instruct them when I could have saved so much more time by walking through the grocery store, finding what I needed, and then consulting my list at the end. I've seen new clinicians, students, as well as residents and fellows, like they're not looking at the patient when they're talking to them. They're looking at their list, bread, eggs, milk, and they're moving down that list. And they're not walking through the store and picking what they know they need. And that's the big issue. I want to teach people to care for patients the way they shop for groceries.
How are you supposed to connect if there's a list between you and the patient?
Yeah, exactly, right?
You could miss something.
My whole focus is on them and what they need and what their expectations are. And so I kind of walk people through some motivational interviewing principles. I use some examples of stuff, conversations I know we've all had with patients, and that help kind of reorient them toward this sort of principle-based approach that really helps them focus on the patient and not focus kind of on their list and on their rehearsal and on their checkbox. Imagine how long it would take you to go through that grocery store if you just did one item at a time.
Sure.
And you went back to the beginning of the grocery store each time. And we don't even think about that, but that's exactly what a lot of those patient encounters can look like.
Because you mentioned that you were guilty of it too, and I'm sure a lot of people listening, either started that way or still that way. How long did it take for you to recognize that change, make it, and then actually see a change? Maybe compliance improves. Was it pretty quick when you started really communicating and actually making eye contact or making eye contact more?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it proceeded in stages. So I think like all of us, behavior change for me, just like behavior change for some of my patients, is not easy. And there are little bits that I picked up quickly. And then there are other bits that I had a much harder time with. And some, we talked about the unconscious bias before. Mm-hmm. And then some that I'm only coming into a couple years later. So I think it's something I'm still learning to do. It's something I could still benefit from working on. But for me, the principle of looking at the patient and focusing on the patient and not on my list or my requirements alone, and just spending time making that connection, that alone, that made a huge difference for me. And it didn't take long. I mean, I think that I've had, and the reason I say that is that I've had people contact me after we do teaching or mentoring or anything, any of the things that we do formally or informally. And they tell me about how they've gone along. And people are telling me that this makes a huge difference in their practice. And I know it has made a difference in mine as well. And it can happen in as soon as a month.
That's got to feel good. When you get an email like that saying, hey, I listened to that thing and it's caused change in me and now my patients. That's got to be cool.
Hey, Jimmy, that's what I'm in it for. Yeah. I'm speaking at this guy. I don't go to conferences for the money. Believe me, this is not a surgical conference. This is physical therapy, I mean, maybe I'm going to make enough to repair that scratch on the side of my Prius, right? So I'm not in it for the money. I'm in it for exactly that. I'm in it for people to tell me how much they've improved or to ask me questions about what they've heard so I can help them get better. Because we all could use that. Yeah. People helped me, and I feel a strong need to pay that forward. That's really what I'm trying to do.
That's great. Unconference again, third annual Pain Unconference in Montreal, painunconference.com. It is September 28th, McGill University in Montreal. Not a bad spot to be in the fall is Montreal. Pretty
good. I've never been to Montreal. I can't
wait. Oh, it's nice. I mean, I'm saying it like I've been to, I've never been to Europe, but Montreal feels like what Europe looks like in movies anyway. It's definitely, it definitely doesn't feel like it's just north of New York State to me anyway.
Oh, wow. Well, Europe I've been to, but Montreal never. So maybe we'll compare notes.
There you go. Hey, you got time for three questions? We ask all this.
I sure do. Guys.
Here we go.
On the hot seat with three questions on the PT Pinecast.
All right, our friends at Arias Medical Staffing, they find PTs jobs all across the country, all 50 states. Find them online at AURESmedical.com. So Jason, the first question is, if you had a chance to go and be a PT anywhere in the country, I'm sure you've traveled around with the Army, but where's a spot you'd go if you said, if you were given carte blanche, you can go here for 3 months and do whatever you want, where would you go?
Oh, man. We have traveled a good bit in the Army, but there's a couple places I haven't been. We've never been to Stein. We've never been to the Pacific Northwest or Hawaii or Alaska. Picking between the three of those, gosh,
yeah.
I don't know.
Good luck.
But I know so many cool people doing really cool things in the Pacific Northwest. I bet I'd pick that, Seattle, Tacoma, maybe something like that.
That comes up a lot when we ask this question to guests. And, so Arias has positions, short-term assignments, long-term assignments, new grad, seasoned professionals, whatever you're looking for. AURESmedical.com is the website, and AURESmedical.com. Second question is a what question, Jason. What's something that you read, watched, listened to, either a book, a movie, a podcast, something that really inspired you that you'd want to share with the audience?
You know, we talked a good bit about hustle today, and we talked about a little bit about opportunity. I've been listening to some Gary Vaynerchuk, entrepreneurship. I got to tell you, I was a little skeptical when I started listening to Gary V. So it sounds like you know who this guy is too.
Yep.
And at first, you know, when you listen to him, you think to yourself, this is just one of these like get rich quick, slick huckster kind of guy. But I tell you what, you start watching what he has to say or listening, as the case may be, like. That guy is really genuine. He understands sincerity. He understands how important positivity is, not only for success, but for your ability to be a leader. And he understands how important it is to stay humble, to be successful.
Don't be fancy.
And I tell you what, a lot of what he says is worth your time and attention.
Same exact thing, Jason. We went through the same probably like development. Is that the first couple of times I'm like, this is an act. This is just for internet.
Yeah.
And then he had a comment. It was like, stop listening to how I'm saying it, but focus on what I'm saying. And he just repeats. He's like, listen, man, I repeat myself all the time. Positivity, hustle, doing what you love. He's like, I'm going to say the same stuff over and over again. Definitely worth a read or a listen. He gives away enough content for free on his vlog and on his podcast, so Gary V is definitely worth it. Third question on three questions is a who question. Who is somebody the audience should know more about?
Boy, I've got a lot of people popping into my head here. So
go at it.
It's definitely going to be hard to run through everybody, but you know who I'm thinking about right now is I'm thinking about my friend Deborah Joy Sheldon. Now, Deborah runs an online mentorship for people who are interested in trying to get better at helping people with persistent pain. And I think that this is one of the amazing things about being connected online we can do in medicine. I mean, don't think of just the simple, easy things like some of the virtual health options. Those are important and great, and they're wonderful. It gives you the idea, the ability to connect with people all over the world and get that kind of personal attention. She has got a mentorship program that is worth your time and attention if you are worried about, oh my gosh, how do I handle these clients and patients with persistent pain? What do I do? How do I think about it? She doesn't just kind of talk the talk. She walks the walk in her practice, and she can mentor and help you to get where you need to go. So you can find her, Deborah, D-E-B-R-A, middle name Joy, last name Sheldon. Check Deborah Joy Sheldon out. She has got some great programs for people. She gives away some content. She's got webinars you can watch. You can find her, online, and it's amazing some of the stuff that she's doing. She's really helping translate a lot of the big, complicated pain science stuff. And like you said, it's pain week.
Right.
She helps people actually practice it in the clinic on a day-to-day basis.
Love
and
it.
It's that kind of translation that I think is missing in a lot of what our research is. And I remember I went to school, got a PhD, thought I wanted to be a researcher. It turns out I don't want to be a researcher. I want to get really good at translating research and helping people
apply
it. Which
is very important.
And, oh, my gosh. And Deborah can definitely help you do that. That's so if you work with patients with pain, which should be, I got to tell you, all of us, check her out.
All right. That's fantastic. All right. You're off the hot seat. That's three questions from Aureus Medical Staffing, AURUSmedical.com. Last thing we do, Jason, is the parting shot.
This is the parting shot.
The parting shot is brought to you by Rock Tape. They're more than just a tape company. They're a movement company. Rock Tape helps athletes of every level go stronger, longer, with the best kinesiology tape, cutting-edge education, and fitness support products. Rock Tape wants people to move more and move better. Find them online at rocktape.com/medical.
All right, parting shot is your last chance to have either a soapbox moment or a mic drop moment or whatever you want to, whatever the kids are calling it these days. What would you want the audience to leave thinking about at the end of this episode?
I want them to think about the big picture context of where physical therapy is going and where healthcare is going. The tremendous amount of disruption that we are only beginning to see in healthcare, the way it hasn't even really started. And if we're smart, we can be way ahead of this. PTs have one foot in performance training, coaching, and health and wellness, and another foot in medicine. We are highly trained, but yet we're totally accessible to patients. It puts us in an amazing opportunity spot to be able to leverage what we do and help deliver a low-cost, low-risk, non-invasive care that works for our patients. If our folks are willing to pick their heads up, see the big context, and grab on to the disruption that's coming. Go be a disruptor.
I like that. Well, it ends where it begins, right? So you mentioned being in a great position, but we got to hustle, right? We got to be in ROTC and doing our internship and working for UPS. You're in a great position, but you got to work it.
You bet. Couldn't agree more.
This is the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC. It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast CEO Jim McKay and CBO Sky Donovan from Marymount University. We talk PT, drink beer, and record it. This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. More on the show at ptpinecast.com.
All right, show today brought to you by the Brooks Institute of Higher Learning, an innovator in providing advanced post-professional education. Brooks IHL offering continuing education courses in numerous specialty areas, 6 PT residency programs, an OMPT fellowship, as well as challenging but rewarding internships. The IHL specializes in the translation of information from evidence to patient management. Learn what they can do for you to support your professional development at brooksihl.org. Our home on the internet.
PTPintcast.com.
Created by Build PT. Build PT provides marketing services specifically for private practice PTs.
From website development and hosting
to providing content marketing solutions
for PT clinics across the country.
See what Build PT can do for you today
at buildpt.com.